This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Big day yesterday for political junkies far and wide. On the local level, Vermonters were focused on school and town budgets and hot-button issues in their communities. On a broader scale, voters had the chance to weigh in on the presidential candidates and join the chorus of other partisans around the country voting in Super Tuesday states. Today on this program, we're going to talk about all of it, and we'll start with the primary results. Care to share your feelings? You can post them on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. I'm joined now by Connor Casey, Executive Director of the Vermont Democratic Party, and Jeff Bartley, Executive Director of the Vermont Republican Party. Connor and Jeff, welcome to the program. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
I'm sure it was a long night for both of you, so I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today. Let's start with Bernie Sanders. Sanders spoke before a big crowd at the Champlain Valley Exposition in Essex Junction last night. Let's just hear a little bit of what he said, thanking Vermonters for supporting him.
You know, we want to win in every part of the country. That goes without saying. But it does say something and means so much to me that the people who know me best, the people who knew me before I was elected, who knew me as mayor, knew me as congressman, and know me as senator, have voted so strongly to put us in the White House. Thank you so much.
I assume there's no surprise that Sanders won the Democratic primary by a wide margin. But Connor Casey, did you think Hillary Clinton might reach the threshold of 15% to at least claim a delegate here?
Well, Jane, that was the big question all night. I think it wasn't a surprise when you looked at the polls going into it that Senator Sanders, being sort of the hometown favorite, was going to carry the day. But yeah, she did fail to reach the 15% mark, which means she isn't qualified for any of the 16 delegates Vermont will be sending down to the Philadelphia National Convention.
Yeah, so you know, it sounded like that was a question. Would she get there? Would she have any delegates? But, you know, Vermont is kind of low stakes for her. She has several of the superdelegates here already on her side. And with 16 delegates, you know, we may say, hey, those are 16 very important delegates, but, you know, some states have hundreds. So was it a wise choice on her part, Connor Casey, do you think, to just sort of leave Vermont out? She knew she wasn't going to win it.
You know, we're not generally heavy hitters on the national stage when it comes to the number of delegates. But, you know, it was an exciting night to be a Democrat here in Vermont. I think we saw a lot of new energy, a lot of new voters, young voters coming to the polls. And, you know, certainly Secretary Clinton is ahead in the delegate count nationally. But, you know, Bernie Sanders shouldn't hang his head either after winning four states last night. I think he had an impressive margin in Minnesota and Colorado towards the end. And I think it's still very much a race. But yeah, we didn't expect to see an enormous ground game from Secretary Clinton's campaign in Vermont.
Jeff Bartley, how closely do you watch what happens on the Democratic side in Vermont, given that this is obviously, you know, a national picture and you're watching all of it on both sides? But how closely do you pay attention to the Democrats?
Pretty closely. And there's a couple reasons why. Is you look at the makeup of the voters in Vermont, and there are a ton of independents out there and a lot of ticket splitters. So I think it's important to see what is playing with the other side of the aisle. Also, obviously, if Hillary Clinton is the nominee or Bernie Sanders is the nominee, it might adjust the narrative in Vermont as we head into November. So, I mean, it is important to pay attention to see how those things shake out.
Well, let's look at the other side of things, too, here. It was neck and neck between Donald Trump and John Kasich for the top votes in Vermont among Republican candidates. Here's Kasich partway through the evening.
Tonight, I can say that we have absolutely exceeded expectations. We are running right now neck and neck with Donald Trump in the state of Vermont.
Now, in the end, Donald Trump did edge Kasich out. But Jeff Bartley, how are you reading those results? Pretty close race between Kasich and Trump here in Vermont.
I think it's there's many different stories we can take out of that. It is, you know, first, you know, the Republican turnout is much higher than it was in 2008 here in 2016. And exit polls, I'm quoting NBC's exit polls, said that 4 out of 10 Republican ballot takers in the primary yesterday identified as independents, and a majority of them were moderates, or even some of them identified themselves as liberal. And you look at Kasich's resume, and I imagine that's where a lot of the play went. When you look across the state, you know, Kasich campaigned in Rutland. He campaigned in Chittenden County twice. He was our keynote speaker at our fall dinner. And he did really well in Chittenden County, and probably some of the more moderate areas of Vermont, and Trump did well in, you know, the kind of the outlying areas of Vermont, you know, northern Franklin County, parts of Rutland County. He outperformed, and those are areas where Republicans traditionally do pretty well. So, you know, I look at it, both Kasich and Trump, you know, Trump did neck it out by a couple percentage points. They're both going to leave Vermont with the same amount of delegates, with 8 delegates, and nobody else will be receiving delegates. So I think it was a good night for Kasich, and it shows that the Republican Party, you know, again, with that turnout, we have a lot of opportunity as we head into November as it relates to Vermont politics.
Yeah, Marco Rubio didn't quite meet the 20% threshold for getting any delegates. I think he was 19.3 the last time I was looking, with about 99% of votes tabulated. But, you know, do you think it was Kasich's ground game here in Vermont that made the difference? Because it looked for a time, you know, according to the VPR polls, it looked like Rubio was doing pretty well in the state. Kasich was doing pretty well as well, both behind Trump in the poll. But, you know, things shift. Obviously, that's a moment in time. But it turned out Rubio didn't come close to where Kasich and Trump were. And Jeff Bartley, do you think that was because Kasich made an effort to be here?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely. You know, Vermont voters and New Hampshire voters are very similar. And obviously, Kasich did pretty well in the New Hampshire primary. He brought over a couple of staffers that ran the ground game here. But it really shows that Vermont politics is very retail centric. And he made the effort. He campaigned here 3 times. He was the only person that had a ground game. Any reports I was receiving of phone calls coming into Vermont for Rubio or any of the other candidates were being made out of state, and they weren't as prevalent. So, you know, I did stop by the Kasich headquarters yesterday. At one point, they had 15 phone callers in there. All of them were actually from St. Michael's and UVM there to support Kasich. And in a state like Vermont and New Hampshire, you just cannot replace that kind of campaign.
We're talking right now about what happened yesterday in the primaries here in Vermont and beyond. And listeners, we're going to move on and talk a little bit about school budgets and other municipal issues coming up. So if you'd like to share your thoughts with us about what happened yesterday in the presidential primary, now's the time to give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Again, 1-800-639-2211, or post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. Connor Casey, for your part, as a part of the Democratic Party in Vermont, how closely do you watch what's happening with the Republican candidates?
Oh, we're watching it quite closely. And I think what interests us is some of the endorsements made by the state candidates here in Vermont. We were surprised to see Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott and 30 Republican elected leaders actually endorse Marco Rubio, a candidate we think is absolutely not in line with Vermont values. This is someone who voted against the Violence Against Women Act. He's, you know, opposed abortion, even in cases of rape and incest, and favors building a wall on the border of Mexico. So as we look towards the general election, I think if I'm a Republican candidate, I'd be very nervous having any of these folks on the top of the ticket, whether that be Ted Cruz or Donald Trump as well.
Although I suppose that's why you work for the Democratic Party, not the Republican Party.
I guess it is, Jane. Yeah.
You mentioned, Jeff Bartley, that the turnout was pretty good for Republicans. It was about 60,000 voters. And that's a strong showing, you think, for Vermont Republicans?
I definitely think so. You know, we look at what had happened in 2014 with the Republican Party, and we really did a great job of reaching out to our voters and turning them out. And, you know, I know there's that Sanders factor out there of energizing parts of the Vermont Democratic Party. But you look at what's going on in Montpelier and the direction the state's heading in, and I think there's a lot of disenfranchised ticket splitters out there. And again, sourcing that NBC exit poll with 4 out of 10 of the respondents saying they are independents and coming to vote in the Republican primary, I think really shows that as a party, we are heading in the right direction. We just need to continue to work hard and harness that.
Democrats were expecting a big turnout yesterday and said that maybe it would even mirror the 08 primary turnout. So, Connor Casey, how did it compare in the end? I think there were about 134,000 votes.
We're a little short of the 08 numbers, but the numbers I tend to look at are the new voters in Vermont. And if you look at the 08 numbers between January 1st and town meeting day, in 08, 6,000 people registered to vote. By contrast, in 16, just recently, between January 1st and town meeting day, we have 14,000 new voters in Vermont. I think this bodes well for the general election. Generally, when there's a high voter turnout, Democrats win. And I think we can carry this energy right into November.
We got a note from Mark who says, when I voted yesterday, I was asked whether I wanted a Republican or a Democratic ballot. As an independent who was sure Bernie would win a big victory in Vermont, I requested a Republican ballot. Also, knowing that despite his best efforts, John Kasich will never win enough delegates to secure the nomination, I cast my vote for him so that I could negate someone else's vote for Donald Trump. I wonder how many others did the same thing, since Vermont is the only state where Kasich truly had a strong outcome. Jeff Bartley, do you think that's a factor?
Anecdotally, I know that what's happening across the state. Like Bernie Sanders, Donald Trump is harnessing and he's tapping into deep anger and frustration. So I know there are people out there that were nervous about a Trump presidential candidate, just as people who are supporting Trump are probably saying the same thing about a quote-unquote establishment candidate. So I'm sure that we could find the same stories and both sides of the equation. And it really shows the race was neck to neck. From Trump's perspective, there were 65-68% of the Republican voters that didn't support him, and same thing for Kasich. So, with 5 or 6 people still in the race, we'll just have to see how this continues to shake out as others potentially drop out.
Let's go to Miriam, who's calling in from St. George. Hi, Miriam. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm just wanted to call and make the comment. My son just moved to Colorado and got established residency last week, and when we went to go register for him to vote, it turns out that in Colorado, you have to declare a party and register for that party. If you wanted to vote yesterday, you had to declare by January 4th. A specific party, they pointed to people who had registered independent who then wanted to vote in the primary this year, would have had to make that decision before January 4th. So I'm appreciative that we have such a active.
Miriam, your phone line is a little bit bad and you're dropping out, but I think what you're saying is, in some states you have to register to vote in a party primary well before the primary actually happens. And in Vermont, I think it was last Wednesday was the last day to be able to register to vote in the primary. So we do have a lot more flexibility to get people who are at the last minute say, hey, I think I want to vote. So thank you for your call. And let's go to Alex in Plattsburgh. Hi, Alex. Go ahead.
Hi. I just had a couple of comments, which is I see on the news after Super Tuesday yesterday, they really say that Hillary has won super delegates. They include those in her and all the graphs and charts you see in the media, when really there's only 195 delegate difference as far as delegates that have actually been won. Super delegates like Howard Dean, that is now a lobbyist for healthcare companies, I think is really going to end up hurting the Democrats. Especially if Hillary goes to the general, she's going to lose independents and the youth and swing states and, in my opinion, almost ensure a Trump victory. I know that I will. I'm an independent. I will vote for Trump before I vote for Hillary.
Wow, Alex, thanks for your comments. Appreciate hearing that. Let's get one more in here from Jackie in Colchester. Jackie, what are you thinking here on the day after Super Tuesday?
Hi. Well, just like the comment that you read earlier, I wanted to point out that I am a registered Democrat who really, really wanted to register a vote on the Republican ticket against Trump. So I voted for Kasich, who seems the most reasonable of all the Republican candidates. And I know several people who did the same thing.
Jackie, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate hearing how you voted. Connor Casey and Jeff Bartley, I'm interested to hear from you in the time we have left. you know, what happens for you now that the primary is over? Do you still think about national politics and work on presidential issues, or do you kind of make an immediate turn now to the gubernatorial and state races? Connor Casey, you first.
Yeah, the focus is going to be on the state election going forward. You know, I think Vermont has said its piece in the primary here, but there's no question we'll have a competitive governor's race. We have Senator Leahy on the ballot. We have Congressman Welsh, and we certainly want to have a strong showing in legislative races because we've heard that a lot of independent expenditure campaigns are targeting Vermont on the national level. So we're going to start getting to work organizing. We're going to win by knocking on more doors, making more phone calls, and having conversations with Vermonters. And I think when you look at what Democrats have done, we have one of the lowest uninsured rates in the country, one of the lowest unemployment rates in the country. It was Democratic policies that, you know, brought us back from one of the greatest economic downturns since the Great Depression, and Democratic policies that got us back on our feet after Tropical Storm Irene. So our job is to get people excited about Democrats. You know, in the last election, 45% came out there, and that's because there wasn't that excitement.
Connor, I can hear you're already making the shift. You're turning now to pump up the pump up the partisans. We're running short on time, so Jeff Bartley, I'd love to get your take on this as well.
Yeah, I'm with Connor. I mean, we never really put a lot of focus into Super Tuesday. We obviously tried to drive turnout help with local municipal votes, but yet, like Connor, we are focused and honed in on November. I think Connor and I probably disagree on the outlook of Vermont, but it is going to be a spirited debate. It is going to be a fun and many sleepless nights for both of us in the future.
Connor Casey is Executive Director of the Vermont Democratic Party. Jeffrey Bartley is Executive Director of the Vermont Republican Party. Thank you both so much for being on the show today.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Coming up, we turn to town results and look at how school budgets fared after all of the confusion over Act 46 spending caps. Please tell us how your town voted. Are you satisfied with your town's school budget and how the voters felt? Call 1-800-639-2211 or post a note on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. In addition to thinking strategically about who to vote for president, Vermonters were asked to weigh in on a host of local issues in town meeting day votes from floor meetings and by Australian ballot. For a recap now of how school budgets fared, we turn to Nicole Mace, Executive Director of the Vermont School Boards Association, and Jeffrey Francis, Executive Director of the Vermont Superintendents Association. Nicole and Jeff, thank you for being with us after what must have been a tiring day yesterday. I appreciate your time.
Sure, Jane. It's great to be here.
Thanks, Jane.
Nicole Mace, how would you characterize overall the school budget debates and votes yesterday?
Well, our preliminary results from close to 230 districts are that budgets were overwhelmingly approved yesterday by voters and communities across the state. And I think that's typical in Vermont. Vermonters tend to show strong support for local district budgets. I think the allowable growth threshold discussion around this budget cycle significantly impacted the process and the discussion. Boards worked very closely with their administrators to develop budgets that kept spending below their thresholds while at the same time ensuring they were able to offer an educational program that met the needs of students. And what we're seeing is that communities overwhelmingly supported those efforts.
Jeff Francis, where did budgets fail?
So according to our unofficial results, there were budgets defeated in Alberg, Benson, Brownington, Eden, Fairhaven, Holland, Isle-Lamotte, Newport City, Reedsboro, Roxbury, and St. Albans Town.
Were those expected, those failures?
You know, it's hard to know what's expected and what's not because in Vermont, the budget process, development, and voting is so localized. Always we see anywhere between 8 and 15 budget defeats. It's hard to pick a pattern. So I don't know what the anticipation was in these communities. That's something really that we need to talk with them more about.
Nicole Mace, from your perspective and knowing that you too can't read voters' minds, do you have a sense of why some of those budgets failed?
I don't. You know, we did try to look at whether there was any relationship between budgets that exceeded the allowable growth threshold. We know that.
And this gets us back to those Act 46 spending caps and the discussion about whether or not the legislature was going to do something to lift the caps before budgets were printed up and sent to voters for town meeting day. And in fact, they did.
Correct. And so we know that around 22 budgets were presented to voters that exceeded their allowable threshold. But we did not see a correlation between those budgets and defeats. As Jeff says, I think it really came down to local issues, local discussions that we don't quite have a handle on this close to the vote.
But overall, it looks like it was a good year for school budgets.
It was not only a good year for school budgets, but really there was an incredible result with respect to five supervisory unions that were voting on unification matters. So across Vermont, five supervisory unions voted overwhelmingly to unify into a single pre-K to 12 district.
You mean within those supervisory unions, not all one big giant supervisory union there?
Correct. So 22 communities and five supervisory unions voted to create five separate unified school districts. And they're in Franklin County, Rutland County, Addison County, and
Orange County.
And the margins of support, I think, were one of the most impressive results from yesterday's votes.
Listeners, we would love to hear from you if that's something that you were thinking about in your community. I know some other communities are thinking about it now for next year, and you're probably watching what happened in town meeting day votes this year to see what other supervisory unions were doing. Our number, if you'd like to share what happened in your town and how you're thinking about town taxes and school budgets and how those fit together, our number is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. And Nicole, I know you were really interested in seeing what was going to happen in places where the consolidation discussion was pretty new, pretty fresh. And you mentioned places like Franklin Central Supervisory Union, Fairfield, St. Albans City, and St. Albans Town. So, you know, it sounds like these were all approved. What does that tell you?
Well, it tells me that, you know, Act 46 was passed in response to real and persistent concerns about equity, quality, and cost in a state that's educating 20,000 fewer students today than we were a decade ago. And when citizens get together around a table and look at the data impacting their districts, their communities, and start to craft a solution that addresses some of the challenges that they face, they're able to put together a plan that responds to both the goals of Act 46, but also the needs of their communities, and citizens are responding in kind.
Jeff Francis, what about from your perspective?
You know, I've been looking at this issue for nearly two decades now. And I think that what's happened in the last 5 or 6 years is that the data has become so compelling with regard to declines in enrollment, the expansion of the aspirations that we have for every child within the education system. I think when you bring Vermonters together and allow them to both identify the issues that challenge your communities and contribute to the crafting of a solution, they make the right decisions. And I think that the overwhelming results in these communities where they voted on merger is reflective of the fact that folks realize that they probably will do better for children in rural communities if they work together. We've got nearly 100 school districts in Vermont that have fewer than 100 kids. We literally have dozens of schools where the population has decreased by half over the last 8 to 10 years. So folks come to the table with the Act 46 framework, look at the opportunity they have to work together to gain some economies of scale and, more importantly, better opportunities for kids. And they say, let's look to the future rather than reside in the past.
Let's go to John, who's on the line with us from Stratford. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much. I'd like to throw out a different idea. Take the supervisory union in Randolph. You know, geographically, it was very easy for them to consolidate. They have one high school, one middle school. and three elementary schools, all within 10 miles of the middle school and high school. It was no problem. The reason they did it was because of the 10% decrease in tax rate. They already consolidated services. Act 46 was supposed to provide equability. In Stratford, we voted to ask unanimously to repeal Act 46 because it doesn't work for us. We have one of the best elementary schools in the state, and we're in a real bind on how to proceed. And even though we kept our costs down, our tax rate has gone up significantly. And I think there's a lot of other districts in that same situation, simply due to the geography of the state. Where it makes sense, good. But where it doesn't, everybody else is penalized because we have to pay that difference.
John, thanks for your comment. I appreciate that. Nicole Mace, how do you respond to John, you know, who said his town was taking a strong stance saying they would advocate for repealing Act 46?
So I think the response to Act 46 around the state has not been universally positive, and the conversations are more challenging in some communities than others, given issues associated with rurality, different forms of operating structures. So if you have a supervisory union that doesn't have districts that all serve the same grade levels, that adds a level of complexity to the conversation. So absolutely want to acknowledge the fact that these are tough conversations. But I think the important thing to understand is that these are necessary conversations. And Act 46 provides a variety of different paths to get to 2018 and the goals that the law has established. So a single unified school district isn't the only option. And what's really critical is for school board members to work with their communities to take a look at what challenges they face and put together a plan that works for them, that also ensures that our systems are set up to be sustainable and high quality over time.
Nicole Mace is Executive Director of the Vermont School Boards Association, and Jeff Francis is Executive Director of the Vermont Superintendents Association. Jeff and Nicole, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
Have a great day.
Coming up, we'll check in with VPR reporters on some of the more controversial and interesting questions on town warnings around the state. If you want to share something that your town grappled with, post a note on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net or call us. Our number is 1-800-639-2211. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're looking at results from yesterday's town meeting and presidential primary votes. In a couple of minutes, we'll hear from NPR's Sam Sanders with a look at how Vermont's primary results fit into the national picture. But first, let's scan the state for some of the more interesting and controversial items from towns and cities that were voted on yesterday at town meetings. I'm joined now by Amy Noyes, VPR's Public Post reporter, and Nina Keck, who focuses on the Rutland area for VPR. Amy and Nina, nice to talk with you both.
Hi, Jane.
So this is not results, but Nina, first I want to talk about an issue that was a problem with the mechanics of voting. And this was in Rutland Town, where I understand they actually hadn't printed out enough ballots for voters.
Yeah, I talked to the town clerk this morning to find out just exactly what happened. And Donna Zeller said they just miscalculated. They're sent the presidential primary ballots from the state. And she said they got 800 for the Republicans and 800 for the Democrats. But they came up short for the local ballots, and they had a record, what she said was a record turnout. I think about almost 60% of registered voters came out. So they were caught up short. They ran Xeroxed copies, but those had to be hand counted, and it just kind of complicated everything and caused some frustration and about a 10-minute wait for some voters who I guess there were some folks that couldn't wait and left. But they are sorting it out. Officials with Rutland Town, results, I should say, are unofficial at this point. They're still counting.
So it was just the high turnout, though, that caused that discrepancy between what they thought they'd need and what they actually needed?
Well, that, and I think the town clerk admitted she has only been on the job for a little over a year, and this was her first presidential primary, and the fact that Bernie Sanders, they thought they had enough ballots, they thought they were ready, and they she said she had looked back to a number of presidential primary races, I think dating back to 2004, to kind of estimate how many ballots they'd need, and there was just that many more people that came out. I think she said they were 120 or 116 ballots short.
Oh, that's so tough. You'll have to check next year and see how many extra ballots they print. They'll be killing
probably
a lot of trees.
Probably a lot.
Amy, let's talk about one of the issues that you've been following, and this is a local option tax. And there were a number of towns that had local options taxes on the ballot. How did the votes go?
They were split down the middle. The question passed in Hartford and in Montpelier, but it failed to gain support in Barrie City and in Ludlow.
So what does that mean? I mean, it was partly done so that there would be some surrounding towns that all had the same policy, but it didn't go that way.
No, it didn't go that way. And Berlin is coming up in November, too. So that would have been a chunk of three towns together that would have passed it. But as you noted, only Montpelier passed it here in central Vermont. And it was different in Montpelier. It wasn't a sales tax. It was only on rooms, meals, and alcohols. And that may have made the difference.
So that still goes forward even without Barrie City and not knowing what happens in Berlin.
Absolutely.
And people in Montpelier, was it a difficult vote? I mean, there were signs up around town from various people supporting or more what I saw opposing the tax.
Yeah, there were signs in pretty much every downtown village or downtown business opposing the tax. But the margin was bigger than I thought it would be. The yes votes were 2,038 and the no votes were 1,231.
Let's talk a little bit, Amy, while I have you here, about town governance. There were a couple of different towns that you highlighted that were taking a look on how they're run and thinking about different ways of doing it. We could talk about Stratford first, if you want.
Sure. Stratford was an interesting case. There was they amended an article to appoint a committee to study governance in the town. And the original article was pretty specific. It specified studying the option of reverting from a 5 to a 3-member select board. They had bumped that up just a couple years ago. And then also hiring a part-time town administrator. The amended article, which passed on a voice vote, took out those specifics and simply directed a committee to study town governance in general.
Hmm. All right. So they're studying town governance in Stratford, but Pomfret and Bethel are making some changes.
They are. Both those towns are increasing the size of their select board from 3 to 5 members, which is what Stratford did about 2 years ago.
On the other hand, in Middlebury, they're getting rid of something.
Yes, in Middlebury, they are getting rid of the position of the elected town auditor. This was a two-step process. So last year, the town voted to amend its charter to allow for the vote that happened yesterday, and then they voted to eliminate the position yesterday. But in practice, Middlebury has hired professional auditors for the past several years, and the elected position has been vacant because no one's been running for the office because there hasn't been anything to do.
Nina, let's talk about an issue that came up in Rutland, and this was a debate about fluoridation in the water supply. Now, you know, if people have not been following debates about fluoridation, it might sound boring and, you know, weird to have a debate, but these get really heated. So tell me a little bit about what happened in Rutland.
The debate was super passionate. I think that's a very good way to put it. People felt really emotionally invested in either fighting the city's stance on fluoride or protecting the fact that Rutland has added fluoride since the early 1980s. I think made it seem like, why is this issue coming up again? But there is a group in Rutland that feels passionately that fluoride should not be added to the drinking water. And I talked to a lot of voters yesterday who felt that, you know, look, you may like fluoride, but you can take it on your own, get it through toothpaste or tablets, but don't put it in our drinking water. Don't force everybody to take it. That being said, this group also sent out a bunch of flyers and a lot of letters to the editor. Some of the information in those flyers was pretty harshly criticized as being misleading. And a lot of dentists, pediatricians came out and said, you know, we firmly stand behind fluoridation. And they pointed to reputable organizations and agencies like the CDC, the American Medical Association, the American Dental Association, and the State Health Department, which all have come out very much in favor of water fluoridation as a public health good, a low-cost and very effective way to ensure oral health. And voters I talked to said they got letters from their dentists. They appreciated that the dentists came out in favor of fluoridations, and that seemed to sway public opinion enough by a large enough margin that it, I think, has been quelled for the moment. But, Jane, one of the interesting things is it doesn't come down to voters. It comes down to the city public works commissioner, Jeff Wenberg. I mean, it's his prerogative on whether or not to fluoridate. And he has always said he's looked to the scientific community for guidance. And unless the city sent a big no vote, he was going to stay the course.
So if you're drinking water in Rutland, it's likely to continue to be fluoridated.
for the foreseeable future, unless the group comes up again with a ballot item. But I think this vote is pretty strong to keep it in the water.
Listeners, is there anything that you want to share about what happened in your town, an issue that you think was interesting that might have statewide implications or be interesting to people in other parts of the state, or something that you'd like to share that surprised you about your town meeting? Now is the time to call 1-800-639-2211, or your comment can live on forever in ignominy or in wonderful responses on our VPR.net Vermont edition page, so you can also post it there. Nina, also, there was a debate in Rutland about a swimming pool.
Yeah, another water issue. This one overwhelmingly supported.
No fluoride in the water and the swimming pool.
Not for the swimming pool. It's a $2.5 million bond that voters approved very strongly, and it's to replace a 40-plus-year-old public pool, White's Pool, that's an outdoor swimming pool used for races, swim meets, swim lessons, and just about everybody that I talked to very few voters who were opposed to the $2.5 million bond. But it'll be a 20-year bond, and if all goes as planned, the city should have the new pool built by June of next year.
Amy, coming back to you here to talk a little bit about some of the other issues around the state that you've been following as our Public Post reporter. I understand in Fairfax there was an issue about trash collection, and did they want to still have curbside pickup even if it was more expensive?
That's exactly right. And they decided, yes, they definitely do want that. It was a pretty strong vote. It's a very small town to have curbside tax-funded trash pickup, but it's something that the voters of Fairfax decided was really important to them.
What about, let's talk about Corinth, because, if you're in Corinth, you cannot buy any liquor. It's not a dry town. You can buy beer and wine, but no liquor right now. So what were voters looking at in Corinth?
Well, that was an interesting case. There is a store in Corinth that sells beer and wine, but back in 1969, the town voted that selling beer and wine was okay, and the select board could issue permits for that, but not liquor, no liquor permits. And now the chairman of the select board is interested in possibly opening a pub in town, and so he thought it'd be a good time to bring that issue back to the voters, and they decided, yes, that you can now sell liquor if the select board gives you a permit to do so.
So that's done. It's not like a non-binding vote. This is now you can sell liquor in Corinth.
It's on the books.
All right. Nina Keck, in Rutland, Rutland area, there was a historical vote with the youngest ever member elected to the Board of Aldermen.
That's right, 21-year-old Vanessa Robertson. She is a junior studying poli-sci and history at Castleton University, very politically involved and interested, and she waged her first citywide campaign and did really well. She beat out two challenges for a one-year seat on the board, and I was surprised how many voters knew her name and were excited to see such a young candidate. I think a number of folks I talked to said that they were excited about having someone, a 20-something on the board. And Vanessa herself, I've spoken to her several times, pointed out she's going to make the women's tally on the Board of Aldermen now 3. There's only 2 currently serving, and she'll be the only 20-something on the board, something that she thought was important.
Nina, your lead for the story this morning teased that there was a mix of both young blood and fresh blood and experience now on the Board of Aldermen. So do you think it's a nice balance?
It is a nice balance. All 4 incumbents who've been serving quite a while on the board were reelected. They're names that are very well known in the city. But I think young people in Rutland are really standing up and trying to get noticed. The Rutland Young Professionals is a group that's really taken off in the city. And I think there's a real push by area young people to get involved and make their presence known. And I think Vanessa Robertson running for the Board of Aldermen is just another sign of that.
One more issue I want to check on here with you, Amy, and that's in Walcott, where the town said yes to spending $325,000 on a new fire truck. But you said this was in question because of some other stuff that was happening financially in the town.
That's right. The department's treasurer has been accused of embezzling thousands of dollars from the fire department over the past few years, but that didn't come up at all. And the fire truck was voted by Australian ballot, and there was no discussion at town meeting about the embezzlement, and the truck vote passed easily.
So, I guess if you need a new fire truck, the moral is you should get the new fire truck.
I guess so.
Amy Noyes is VPR's Public Post reporter. Amy, thanks. Thanks for all your hard work yesterday.
You're welcome, Jane.
And Nina Keck is a VPR reporter focusing on the Rutland area. Nina, thanks for your hard work, too, and thanks for being with us.
You bet. You're welcome.
As we discussed earlier this hour, in Vermont's presidential primary results, Bernie Sanders had more than 86% of the vote to Hillary Clinton's 13.6. Since she's under the 15% threshold, Clinton doesn't receive any of the 16 pledged delegates in Vermont. On the Republican side, it was close. Donald Trump came out on top with nearly 33% of the vote to John Kasich's 30%. But since it is proportional voting, they split the available delegates. NPR political reporter Sam Sanders was at the Bernie Sanders rally at the Champlain Valley Expo last night. This morning, I asked Sam Sanders to compare what it's like to see Senator Sanders on his home turf compared to out on the trail.
So I've been on the Bernie plane and the Bernie bus since Saturday. So we did Dallas, Minnesota, Oklahoma, Colorado, Minnesota again, and then Milton, Massachusetts, and then the rally in Vermont. And the thing about all of these things, all these rallies, they're a party. All of them had crowds of in the thousands. The energy is very, very high. And if you only saw Bernie Sanders through the lens and context of those rallies, you'd think he had this nomination locked up. There is a mood of winning in the air at those events that in some ways does not match the reality of how he's shaping up in delegates.
So what you heard out of Bernie Sanders last night felt very familiar to Vermonters, also felt very familiar to you from what you're hearing from him.
Yeah. So, you know, he had been shy to talk to the press after South Carolina's loss, but he did speak with us Monday on the tarmac in Boston and basically said, I'm in this thing for the long haul. By the end of Super Tuesday, only 15 states will have voted. I believe all 50 should have the chance, and it is my duty to take that fight and my message across the country. So he says that he's in it for the long haul. Just this morning, his top staffers said that they have a path and a plan to close the gap in delegates between him and Hillary Clinton by June. And they have money. He raised $42 million last month alone. So he can be in this thing for the long haul, and he plans to do so.
Well, and Vermonters, clearly by their votes, would like to see that happen. I mean, they voted him, 86% of Democrats voted for him.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton didn't even make the threshold of 15%. But is that the disconnect that you're talking about? Not necessarily Vermont voters, but the Sanders plan to capture the nomination versus what all of the pundits and analysts are saying is more likely, which is that he won't?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the realities of Vermont is that there aren't very many black voters here. And the path to being the Dem nominee includes winning over a lot of black voters. This morning, some top strategists for Sanders said that he should fare better with northern black voters in states like Michigan because they will appreciate Sanders' stance on trade policy, which he says has hurt them. But that's no guarantee, and he has not proven yet that he can get the black vote. He seems to be doing a bit better with Latinos, but that might not be enough. And I think that the states that he's done very well in, Vermont and New Hampshire and Iowa, those states don't really reflect the diversity of the Dem electorate right now.
Do you think, though, you mentioned he has the money to stay in?
Oh, yeah.
So he'll be staying in, he says, at least through June when they say they're going to have the nomination.
And, you know, the feeling that I get from observing his campaign and his staff and his message, he feels a duty to his small donors to see that money through. You know, he's not taking money from big donors. He doesn't have a super PAC. From what I've heard, a lot of folks that give to his campaign, they don't even have jobs. So he sees this as a duty, and he needs to finish what he started, and that money is there for a reason, and he has no reason to not see it all the way through.
You know, from my perspective, I've been listening to people, especially more so when he started, but now again, talking about Bernie Sanders is really in it to make a difference in the discussion, not to win it, and that's certainly not what he said. He has always said he's in it to win it. Do you think that he's made a difference?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I mean, Hillary Clinton, for all intents and purposes, was a moderate for the last several years. Now, at least from her stump speeches, she is a progressive. And I think Bernie Sanders deserves a lot of that credit. I also think other factors were at play this election with the Democrats, the Black Lives Matter movement for sure. But yeah, the conversation with Democrats this election has moved to the left, and Bernie has been a part of that.
And if he stays in it through June, even if he's not capturing the delegates that he needs to win, how does that change the conversation?
I'm not sure how much further left Hillary Clinton goes. She's moved left on a few issues already. But I do think that if he stays in, he's going to keep her having to talk about those things. You know, I'm sure that at some point she would want to moderate her message and talk about some other things to appeal to moderates. But if Bernie's still there, she still has to speak to the Bernie Sanders issues.
So do you keep following Bernie now? Where do you go?
I go home for a few days. I don't know where they send me next. I never know where they send me next. But we'll see.
Well, Sam Sanders, thank you very much for talking with us.
This is really fun. Thank you.
Sam Sanders is a political reporter for NPR and a contributor to the NPR Politics podcast, which, by the way, is fabulous. You should definitely listen to it if you haven't already been listening. Now, tomorrow on the program, 80 years ago, Vermont voted on a statewide referendum that would have created a national park in Vermont. But since there is no Green Mountain National Park today, you can guess how the vote went. Tomorrow, we'll discuss whatever happened to Vermont's national park. Send your questions or comments to vermontedition@vpr.net, and be sure to listen to the show tomorrow at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri and Sam Gale Rosen. Mary Williams directed the show, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. And speaking of podcasts, we have one too. So if you have missed anything ever on Vermont Edition, you can go back and find it in our archives at vpr.net or subscribe to the podcast, and you'll never have to miss a thing. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.